Hi, everyone, and welcome in to Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you. And Phil, well, let's just say Tuesday sucked, didn't it?
Yeah, that did not go optimally.
So we're going to break down the very disappointing loss to Purdue, how concerned on a scale of 1 to jump off a bridge we are with Marquette's defense, and we'll look ahead to Maui, which I wish we were looking ahead to going to Maui ourselves, but we'll at least talk about Marquette being in Maui and its implications this week and the rest of the season, and we will just close the books on the Quentin Grimes recruitment as he is now officially a Kansas Jayhawk. Yeah, we'll get to that in a little bit and wrap it up with some recruiting at the end. But, Phil, let's first start with what we've seen from Marquette through two games. And, Marquette Twitter was afire on Wednesday as we all kind of started processing statistically what we saw on Tuesday night when Marquette's defense, really all of the red flags that we were concerned about, they were all there, and they just got abused inside by, granted, a good Purdue team, but Purdue sure made it look easy.
Well, I will say this. This is going to be a bit of a long ramble, simply setting up the story.
Good news, there's no time limit on this podcast.
That's
just
correct.
Take it away.
Yeah, no time limit. Now, I will say this. So I got to preface this story because I think I'm going to come out in a slightly, at least based on what I've been able to tell, a slightly different position than a lot of folks have been. So long story short, I was in Houston all week for the real world job. And
what, you mean you flew right over my head this week and you didn't tell me?
You may have been informed okay. After the fact.
I know, you going to Houston and me being in Dallas, that's like me saying, hey, Phil, I'm in Minneapolis. You want to come by?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's not exactly close.
Well, let me drop everything and get over there.
But please, as you were, you were in Houston.
Yes, so I was in Houston for work, and I had, in fact, a work event Tuesday evening with numerous executives, and the kind of thing you're not – it's very frowned upon to be looking at your phone and cursing. So I remained blissfully unaware of the Marquette proceedings until I got back to my hotel room with about four and a half minutes left in the game. Saw the score, and you and I started texting back and forth as we're wont to do in the game. And as a result, I kind of had a very disappointing evening thinking, man, Marquette was terrible. This was awful. Very angry. The defense is awful again. And then I had an all-day thing on Wednesday where I had very little time to spend on my phone. But with a little time I was on my phone, when I went to Twitter, it was as if the world was on fire because everything I heard about was how statistically awful Marquette's defense was, and we'll be lucky to win another game. Then funny thing happened. I went and I had recorded the game. I came back home on Friday, and then Saturday morning my son decided to get up at 5 a.m., which is super awesome. But I figured, you know, I'm going to be a hero here. I'll get up, let the wife character sleep, and I will put on the Marquette basketball game, get re-angry, and let my son watch it and be entertained so I didn't have to do any actual parenting. So all that aside to say, when I watched the replay of the game, after having all these preconceptions of how awful we were and how it didn't go well and statistically the defense is a disaster, I have to say I didn't think it was that bad. I mean, Purdue, I think, is going to be a top 10 team, and they have 2 7-plus footers to throw at Marquette. In the first half, they went 0 from 7 behind the arc with good shooters. Marquette was in within 2 at halftime. They got into foul trouble, but if there's enough extenuating circumstances there that I actually came away from the Purdue game, and maybe it was because I was preconditioned to think it was awful, I'm actually more optimistic about the team than I was before.
Well, it's kind of like when I went to see Justice League this week. I went in thinking this is going to be really bad, and with that mindset, I watched it, and I didn't hate it, but it was still probably a very average movie at best. But I can see what you're saying about this Purdue game, that there were things, maybe, like, the defense actually kind of kept them in the game in the first half when Marquette wasn't making any shots. But the problem is, of course, number one, Purdue's big men did literally whatever they wanted all game. You know, they, when they were on the bench, was really the only time Marquette made any kind of headway in that game. So it was a really rough game for Matt Helt, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was the fact that they went, I want to say, 12 minutes in the second half, scoring on every possession Purdue did.
Yeah, that was not
12,
was
15 minutes. You know, even if the defense wasn't a disaster in the first half, the point is it was a disaster in the second half and Purdue pulled away. So the defense did, the lack of defense definitely did cost them the game because they never got any stops in the second half, so the offense was never able to chop away at any lead. And, you know, to your point, Phil, you know, the Purdue big men were unlike anyone Marquette is going to see the rest of the year, really. I mean, they will see some good big men. You know, obviously Happ will be a huge concern when they play Wisconsin. Maybe he doesn't have as much help down low as Haas does, but I'm sure Happ
and he
still does, score.
But he doesn't have as many shooters on the perimeter. And he Maybe has not, a complete but... inability to pass out of the post. But I guess I'm just saying that from the defense, yes, there it was no doubt struggles. I'm just saying from a technical, the way the defense, because even Purdue was getting shots and they scored buckets, obviously, but the shots weren't as easy as I would have thought they would have been, or as easy as some of them were last year. I mean, Purdue wasn't getting no footers. Yes, they were making shots, and they were taking shots that were probably better than they should have been, but they were always challenged shots. The rotations got there. They hit some threes with hands in their face in the second half. So I think the red flags statistically are there, but I think the statistics are somewhat misleading because the team seems to already be playing defense a little more aggressively than they were last year. Again, one game. Plus, I mean, Froehling's coming, so that'll bring more height. And Sam Hauser was sick all week. So, I mean, I don't know. I it wasn't good. I agree with that, but I...
Yeah, you can't really spin it that the defense is good, but I would also say let's pump the brakes on canceling the season, too.
Right.
Because it is just two games, and yes... As we record this Sunday night on KenPom, Marquette is 347th in the country in two-point defense. There are 351 teams, so...
That seems bad.
Really, really, really bad. But I will say this about the two-point percentage defense. I know it's been pointed out a couple times that it was their effective field goal percentage defense was actually worse against Mount St. Mary's, but... Freshman got extended run in that game, and I think it got a lot, and so the Mount probably got a lot of layups that they probably would not have gotten had Marquette played, you know,
a full extent.
I mean, Elliott got extended minutes. Jamal Cain got a bunch of minutes.
They played essentially four freshmen or sophomores with Hanif Cheatham at the point for 5-6 minutes straight. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a small sample size still. Granted, there are still some factors from last year's statistics for the current players that have factored into this current ranking, I guess, is how KenPom works until, I guess, they get to a certain point this season where it's all this season stats. But even that being said, we're still just two games in, and one game is against a team that very likely could be the best team Marquette played. Well, maybe the second or third, depending on how good Nova and Xavier end up being. But... No one is going to have big men like Purdue does. And
Men with shooters that can space the floor.
Yeah. You know, Purdue was long, and like Purdue has the tools to be a Final Four team for sure. I'm not saying they're a top four team in the nation. I'm saying they can make the tournament and win four games.
Right.
Absolutely.
I'm just saying that, you know, the defense looked like the positioning looked better, and sometimes you can play your best and the other team is just flat out better. And I don't think this was a case of Marquette was awful. So much of it is a case was Marquette was maybe average and Purdue is just really, really good.
Yeah, Purdue was on their game. There's just no doubt about it. And you kind of referenced there, Phil. They did hit some threes that just made you say, all right, screw everything. They're hitting everything right now. And, like, Purdue was very well coached. When Marquette did finally start, like, doubling Haas, and maybe that's something they should have maybe tried a little earlier, but then Purdue, he passed out of it. They swung it around, and they got some good looks at threes. And that's when their threes started falling in the second half. So, any adjustments Marquette made, Purdue was a step ahead of them. Purdue's just a little more talented, a little more experienced, maybe a little better coached. So it was a bad loss, but it's not a loss that makes me want to punt on the season just yet.
Nor is it a loss that's unexpected, right?
I think we all predicted, when I say we, I mean you and I, as well as anyone else who contributed to that Paint Touches preseason predictions thing. Everyone who wrote it contributed to that predicted the Purdue game as a loss, and for good reason. And we saw why. Purdue is better than Marquette. That's just all there is to it. They're a better team, and they played like it.
Right. And I think 9 times out of 10 or maybe 9.5 times out of 10, Purdue's going to win that game. I mean, they're just a better team, and we have to accept that. Like I said, when I was looking at watching that game, waiting to be angry about how slow the rotations were or the poor choices that were made, you know, and I think all through the game there were lapses here and there. You know, you get Greg Elliott in or Sakar, and they're not quite as experienced, obviously. But, I mean, it boils down to things like Matt Heltz just simply overmatched against somebody like Haas, right? You're not going to change that. Maybe Froehling helps some and changes things, but I there's going to be very few teams in the country there that are going to be able to handle Haas with some sort of, you know, maybe Wisconsin with Happ, right? I mean, it's like on like in terms of guards, but guarding each other. But there's going to be very few teams that are going to kind of be able to stand up to a 7'2" senior with all that experience and capability and come away unfazed.
Yeah, I honestly kind of felt bad for Matt Helt in the second half there. I think it was after he picked up his fourth foul when Haas was back in the game. He just had that look on his face like, I am getting my butt kicked out here.
Right.
Like, this is – like, he just had a look on his face like, this is absolutely brutal. And he was exhausted, and he kind of had that look on his face of accepting defeat that it was just – I just want to get out of here, and I want this game to end. So, it was a rough day for Helt, and hopefully things get better. Like you said, he's got help coming, but Froehling will not – be there for another few weeks until after the Wisconsin game. But
they did go they did go small ball, and Hauser did, I wouldn't say a great job, but I mean he was serviceable against Haas a couple of times.
It was just okay. And you know what also was tough is that when you're back up to help in Theo John is also foul prone.
Oh yeah. It's a race to see who's more foul prone.
Yeah, that's the thing that's tough for me is you got two bigs in there, but I mean they both foul a lot, and like that was honestly one reason why I thought Ike Eke might not redshirt this year is just to have an extra big this year. Not that he would have helped at all against Purdue, but just to have a few extra fouls to give in the front court, especially while you're waiting on Froehling. And I don't know if Eke is going to play much next year anyway, because none of the bigs are leaving, at least
right.
None of them are scheduled to. And Joey Hauser comes on the roster and Ed Morrow is eligible next year as well. So that's why I thought Eke might redshirt next year, similar to what Sakar did. He played a tiny bit his freshman year, redshirted, and then came back as a sophomore this year. But I'm getting off track. But the big concern is Marquette only has so many fouls to give in that front court, and when John and Helt are both on the bench in foul trouble, then it falls on Hauser, and Marquette is forced to go small, whether that's the best strategy in that given situation or not. So, the big guys need to foul less, and two, Hauser better get used to playing some five for at least the next 3 weeks.
Yeah. Well, I also think there's an argument to be made if we trade threes for twos, if we give up twos, but we're making threes at least an equal rate, all right, well, then we're going to come out ahead there. But we need to find more scoring options on the offensive end. I will say that Sakar and Hanif were serviceable, and they certainly put in Yeoman's work on the defensive end. But one of those two or hopefully both have got to find a way to contribute on both ends of the court, successfully, because they weren't generating enough offense that could take pressure off of Rousey and Howard, who both got theirs, but you know, we needed a third option, or I guess a fourth option behind Hauser, and it just never presented itself, which kind of put us behind the eight ball multiple times.
Yeah, giving up threes for twos may sound like it works mathematically, but if you're giving up 65% on twos, you're not going to shoot 65% on threes to kind of to counteract that over the course of the game.
Well, hell, you're probably not even going to give up. You're probably not going to make 50% of your threes to make it mathematically balanced.
Yeah, you're probably going to be shooting in now Marquette's at 35.4%, which is not bad. That's in the upper half of the country. And, you know, last year, of course, they were one of the top overall in the entire country. So the three-point shooting is slowly coming around. It'll be there. Once we get through, 10, 12 games, I'm confident that Marquette will be in the top 50 in the country in three-point percentage. They're just not there right now. But still, you're going to need to get stops. Just the hope that you're going to just outscore everybody 100-95 is just, I don't think, is a way you want to live going forward with this team. Because, if you're going to do anything of any significance, you have to have something that resembles a defense. Again, it's early, so I'm not ready to hit the panic button, but there are certainly red flags to be concerned about as we look ahead to Maui and the rest of the non-conference schedule.
I think it's fair. I'm open-minded that they're better, but I'm not going to dispute that there's certainly cause for concern. We're going to have to see, in VCU coming up. It's a different team than Purdue, a totally different style, potentially a slightly better matchup for Marquette defensively, and let's see if that makes a difference, because I think it's going to have to be one of those. And I feel like we've said this the last season or two that, an early game feels must-win-ish, but I think this is kind of a must-win-ish game.
You're not wrong there. If we kind of transition ahead to talking about Maui, of course, the Maui Invitational starts on Monday. Really, by the time you guys are listening to this podcast, it'll probably be time to get to that first game, talk about VCU, because it starts at 1:30 Central Time. I don't know about you, Phil, but I'm taking a long and late lunch on Monday to try to catch some of this Marquette VCU game.
I have two monitors at work, one of which will not be doing work.
And that is similar plan for me. I actually have a television in my office because, sports. So, but, the stuff that we have brought up many times, Phil, as really ever since the Maui Invitational bracket came out, is kind of, first of all, what a swing game this is as far as Marquette's strength of schedule. Because, if the bracket holds as projected, if you win, you're probably getting Wichita State in the next game. It's Wichita State is playing a pretty bad Cal team in the first game. And then, also on the loser's bracket, you're definitely almost certainly going to have Chaminade over there and probably LSU, who's probably going to be a 500-ish or worse team in the SEC. And then Michigan and Notre Dame likely going to be on the winner's side. Again, their upsets happen out there. But, we did that. I mentioned earlier, Phil, that those preseason projections we did with paint touches, we went game by game. We broke that down in the last podcast. I went back to that website, the T-Rank website, BartTorvik.com, and I did two scenarios. One, Marquette defeating VCU, as that was my projection going in, and then losing to Wichita State, and then losing or winning, they both came out the same, a final game against either Michigan or Notre Dame. And then I went the other way, losing to VCU, and then beating Cal, and then beating LSU. Beating VCU, so going towards the winner side, and then losing to Wichita State, and then whatever happens in the last game, that has, according to T-Rank's projections, Marquette as one of the last teams into the tournament as an 11 seed. Going the other way, if you lose that game and then defeat Cal and LSU, that has Marquette 11 spots out of the tournament.
So, decisive difference.
So, I'm not saying the whole season depends on this game, but Marquette's entire resume could depend on how they do in Maui. Because there's just such a big swing in strength of schedule depending on what happens in this VCU game. Because first of all, you know, as we said in the last pod, we said when we broke down the bracket over the summer, Phil, VCU's a good win in itself.
Absolutely.
VCU's probably going to be a bubble team themselves. They almost always are a team that's on the good side of the bubble. So a win over them is always good when it comes down to if you're one of the last two or three teams fighting for a spot. And then, as you know, Wichita State is one of the top teams in the country. They are Final Four caliber. And you know, Michigan and Notre Dame are going to be good teams. So that's why I think there's a lot of pressure on this VCU game, because one, it would be a quality win, and two, it's a huge boost to your strength of schedule if you head to the winner side, assuming there are no big upsets above you in this Maui bracket.
Well, plus the other thing is, I mean, things like Ken Palmer forecast, and again, early season caveat, but are forecasting that Marquette should win this game. So statistically or on paper, Marquette should win. Marquette needs to win. So this is the kind of the red flag game for me, right? Can Marquette play solid defense or, you know, average defense and outscore VCU?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not expecting Marquette to ever hold a team to like 40 points this year. I'm not ever expecting a performance like that. But yeah, just average defense and get it to the point where you can just beat a solid team like VCU. Like you mentioned, Phil, Marquette, per Ken Pom, is a slight favorite in this game. T-Rank also agrees, has Marquette as a slight favorite. Ken Pom has Marquette as a 5-point favorite over VCU, so a 66% chance to win. So far from a lock, but a noticeable favorite. It's not necessarily a swing game, 1 point one way or the other. So they have as a 5-point favorite. You know, VCU will present some challenges. They do love to shoot threes. So I mean, if they get hot and if you're leaving guys open on the wing like they did it a few times against Purdue, VCU is going to make you pay. And VCU has Matt Helt, well, it may get a little easier just because it's never going to get much harder than Isaac Haas. Helt does not have an easy matchup in this game either. Justin Tillman is a big guy. He's a senior. He's a 6'8", 220. He's another guy who's probably going to give Helt some problems down there because he's another guy who's pretty physical and can control the boards and could, you know, I mean, he could go to the rack when he needs to and probably power his way to get some easy buckets against Helt. So there are certainly some matchup problems that VCU could take advantage of if Tillman is able to get going for VCU.
Well, not to mention that VCU still plays some form. You know, Shaka's gone. You can, as Ben Steele for Milwaukee Journal Sentinel said, you know, in his game day article today, insert done deal joke here. But
it is the done deal derby, as Crack Sidewalks has been tweeting about.
Yes. But they still like to play some form of havoc or some sort of, 94 feet of hell kind of thing. So, right. You know, and Rousey hopefully can break that press. Howard, I'm less enthusiastic to have Howard bringing the ball up against pressure. So we'll see. I mean, that's kind of a double-edged sword for Marquette. One, on the bad side, they might struggle in initiating offense or at least getting the ball into the front court. But, you know, their game is predominantly a transition offense game, right? They want to move quick
into
the offense quick.
Yeah, VCU wants to turn you over, and so they will pressure, and I'm with you, Phil. It may be asking a lot for Marquette's guards to bring the ball up against that. I saw that they stopped in Los Angeles on their way to Maui and worked out at the Clippers practice facility, thanks to Doc Rivers.
Cool.
Lazar
Hayward.
And Lazar was hanging out. It's like seeing a ghost, seeing Lazar out there. But I think I hope some of that practice time was spent on press break and trying to make quick decisions. And I know I've seen coaches before try to work on press break by just having the offense play against six or seven guys just to try to get used to how chaotic it's going to be. I'm sure and I would hope that Marquette is prepared for that and that Marquette's guards are ready for havoc or whatever they're calling it now at VCU. There are a lot of reasons to be pessimistic in this game, because if Marquette's turning it over, because Marquette can't hit those threes if they can't get the ball across midcourt and they're turning it over. So, I mean, yeah, it's going to be a challenge. I still think you know, if Marquette can just get in its half-court set, Marquette should be – I mean, Marquette's guards should be talented enough that – I mean, that they should be able to get their shots. And Hauser, as always, is going to be a matchup problem for any team he goes up against. And I'm kind of looking at him to kind of be an X factor in this game as well, because I don't know if VCU is going to have a guy that's going to be able to really match up well with Hauser.
Right. Well, so. I think other than the – I think you're absolutely correct that Tillman against Helter or Theo John is going to be a real matchup problem for Marquette, and Tillman's kind of where VCU's offense runs through. But that aside, I think at the other four positions, Marquette is at least equal or I think they've got the talent there at each of those other four positions. And some of those positions, like – Sam Hauser, I think, give Marquette a decided advantage. So this is a game, I will say the word should. This is a game Marquette should win. All sorts of crazy things happen. I mean, VCU's, you know, gonna play an aggressive game of basketball, and they're playing in Maui when their body clocks think, you know, it's going to be 1:30 Central. You know, in Maui, it's going to be what they're tipping off at essentially, you know, 8 a.m. that's not a normal thing.
You
in March Madness, it's not a normal thing.
You mentioned the body clock thing. I don't know what it's like, you know, they say that a lot for West Coast teams going east, but this is, you know, you're going from Central time zone. Bottom line is you're not used to waking up, having breakfast, and then playing a game.
Right. Exactly.
If you are, it's because it's a noon game or something. You're not, like, used to, like, waking up at probably what, I don't know how early they'd have to get up at, you know, Maui time, you know, 5 or 6 a.m.
Yeah, get probably.
Get, you know.
And, get warm-ups, and, yeah, it's going to be a weird early day.
But the good news is you hit the beach. You got all day to hit the beach afterwards. So there's
That is true. You've been following the Marquette Basketball Instagram, they've been hitting the beach pretty good the last couple of days. So they should be relaxed, I guess.
Yeah, I'm jealous of them in that regard. But I hope they're ready for VCU. But I think you did kind of touch on a good point there, Phil. Is that talent wise? I mean, there's no denying it. Marquette has better players. I mean, VCU has some very good players. But if you're going to go man for man and say which guy, you know, which matchup is better, maybe VCU has some more experience. But Marquette has better players, and Marquette should win this game. So I am hopeful that the KenPom and T-Rank predictions are true, and I picked this as a win when we were making our preseason predictions. I'm still going to go with that. I'm hoping that Marquette can find a way to get by VCU. Just have, you know, they have the talent to beat VCU for sure, just if the execution's going to be there. And hopefully that two-point percentage defense can come down from 65%, which is just atrocious. I mean, Marquette's effective field goal percentage defense is almost in the 300s. It's ranked 291 in the country. Again, there's only 251 teams. So hopefully nowhere to go but up or down, depending on how you're looking at it.
Right.
So better from here.
Yeah, well, that's true. There's only room for improvement. And this is, I suppose, why as a fan, you know, rooting for this team, here's the scary thing, right? So I've been relatively optimistic throughout. If they can't beat VCU or their half-court defense is abysmal or whatever it is, you know, we can talk all we want about Froehling coming onto this team, but he's not like the second incarnation of Lou Alcindor, right? I mean, he's a player. I'm sure he's going to bring talent and capability and bring more depth and some experience. But he's not going to flip this team into a national championship contender when he comes. This team has to have, you know, it has to be like 95% of the way there, you know, before Froehling comes back and joins the team. So, you know, not to throw the towel in early, but if Marquette struggles and loses to VCU and struggles on the defensive end, I think that might be the time to hit the panic button, because I don't think
it's
going to get better.
Yeah, if they go out there and have a bad showing in Maui, like say they come out of there with two losses on the loser side of the bracket, like they lose to VCU and then lose another game because they're just not guarding anybody, yeah, there would be plenty of reason to hit the panic alarm. If all they do is come out of there with a win over Chaminade, that would be That would be pretty bad, because not only that, it would be a bad sign is statistically, they would have really nothing on their non-conference resume going forward.
And no reason to believe if you can't win two games. I mean, there's quality teams in this tournament, don't get me wrong. But if you can't win two out of three in this bracket configuration, I don't know how you expect to go on and win Georgia, Vermont, Wisconsin, you know, all of which will be without Froehlich. You're just not any better matched up. I know it's neutral in Maui and weird things can happen. I just don't know how they're going to turn it around for those games if they don't come away with two wins in Maui at least.
Well, I will say this, two wins would be awesome, and that's what I'm hoping for, but one win would be acceptable if the one win is VCU. Like, if you beat VCU and then you lose to Wichita State, there's nothing wrong with losing to Wichita State.
And then
if you lose to Michigan or Notre Dame, you know, that would be an acceptable neutral court loss. That, you know, it's probably not a game you'd be favored to win in a team against a team that's almost certainly a tournament team. Obviously, you'd love to have it, but it's not a game where, like, obviously you'd come away with a rough feeling with two losses in Maui, but it would not be a resume disaster to go 1-2 with the one win over VCU. Going 1-2 when you're going the other way, if you lose to VCU and then you lose something else on the loser side, that would be bad. That would be a bad result for Maui. 1-2 going on the winner side, I would say, would be the just slightly above average as far as coming away from Maui. To get one win over VCU and then lose two. Getting a win over VCU and then winning one more, that is great. And that is really all I could realistically ask for. Winning the whole thing, I am set for the tournament, making my plans for March. But that's getting way ahead of ourselves. But
I think Marquette comes away either 1-2 or 2-1, and it's just a question of you know what that looks like for our non-conference strength of schedule. Because I'm not even entertaining 0-3, because then we should just shut the program down at that point.
Yeah. If they lose all three, including a loss to Chaminade, shut it down. Because, like you said, Froehlich will be a nice addition, but he is not like an NBA talent being interjected into this team that's going to just change everything. He'll be a nice addition. It could probably definitely help out in the front court, especially with the foul situation, and it could even probably spell Matt Helt a lot if Helt continues to struggle with, you know, other physical big men. But Froehlich will be a nice addition, but not a totally season-changing addition. So there has to be a good showing here for Marquette fans to have any reason for optimism going forward.
Yep, completely agree.
All right, before we get out of here, before I move on, official prediction for Maui, Phil, from you is what?
I'm gonna say,
by the time any of people listen to this, the first game will be over, but that be that as it may.
Let's try it. I'm going to try and get it out tonight, but I'm going to say 79-71 Marquette.
So you are beating VCU.
Okay. Beating VCU, yes.
And then after that?
Losing to Wichita State, and then I do think they win, and I think that Wichita State game may be close, and then I think they probably play Notre Dame, because why not, and they beat Notre Dame.
That is what I'm kind of basically hoping for, and I would love that. Two wins, including one of them being Notre Dame at the end for a third-place finish in Maui. That's kind of what I'm hoping for. I'm going to go maybe a little higher scoring because I still think the defense will have trouble, but I'm hoping Marquette's shots start falling. So I'm going to go 88-84.
Wow, defense optional.
Yeah, that's basically what the season has been so far. So that's what I'm going for, and I'm hoping the defense is just enough. And yeah, I'm predicting if they win that things will go very poorly against Wichita State. That'll be a tough one to watch probably. And then, I'll say a win. I'll say a win over Notre Dame in the third place game. So that's what I'll go for. All right. So before we wrap this thing up, Phil, we will touch on just to close the book on the Quentin Grimes recruitment that did end this past week. And as we kind of had a feeling last week on the pod, Phil, Marquette was out for Grimes, and that turned out to be the case. He was always kind of a Kansas lean. Most people predicted him to Kansas. So now that it's over, I'll just ask this, maybe as a devil's advocate, Phil. Was Marquette wasting their time going after Grimes, or was it a worthwhile pursuit?
Oh, no, I think it was absolutely a worthwhile pursuit. Like, were there other candidates? Like, were there other point guard candidates that Marquette had a realistic shot with? I don't know. It depends on if they had poured the kind of resources into them that they did with Grimes, and they would result. I mean, we've talked about it ad nauseum, but that was a house money play going for Grimes, right? I mean, the roster is full for next season officially.
Yeah, I just kind of asked that, just to, again, kind of be a devil's advocate of the whole thing, just to try to get it. Maybe some people were wondering that, why do you go after a guy when Kansas is the overwhelming favorite and Kentucky's involved? But, if Marquette had 4 or 5 spots to fill, I would have thought maybe you probably wouldn't put that much effort into one guy. But because the roster is full for next year, yeah, again, like you said, Phil, they were playing with house money. They could shoot for the stars and try to get an All-American, and they had established a relationship with this kid in Houston who seemed to like the program, liked them enough to take an official visit. And I think, Marquette fans may not like this term, but it's probably true. Marquette was probably Grimes' safety school. He probably was very intrigued and, flattered by all the attention Marquette gave him. And he probably looked at Marquette, and maybe Texas too, as a place that he could definitely go and be happy if the Blue Bloods passed on him. Like if Kansas and Kentucky recruited over him, because maybe at the time, like earlier this summer, early in the fall, maybe he wasn't 100% sure that he was a top priority for Kansas or Kentucky for that matter, and said, "Look, Texas is my hometown school, and Marquette really likes me. If Kansas or Kentucky recruit too many guards and they don't treat me as their top priority, and they fill too many spots and they move on past me, I could definitely go to a place like Texas or Marquette and be very happy." So I think that's kind of what Grimes was looking at with Marquette, is why that's why he kind of kept them in as long as he did. That Marquette did a good job. They had his attention. They gave him plenty of reasons to consider their school. The bottom line, you're just when Bill Self wants a guy that badly, you're not going to beat Bill Self unless you're Mike Krzyzewski or John Calipari. You're just not.
Right. I
Or
mean,
Sean
there
Miller,
was, there's no harm though. There's no harm in Marquette going after Grimes. If it would have worked out, man, it would have been amazing. But it didn't, and we're no worse off, I don't think.
Yeah, like I said, all you really, obviously they put a lot of time into it, but again, because they didn't have any other spots to fill for next year, they could afford to put in that time. If they were losing 4 or 5 seniors after this year, I don't think they would have put that much effort into Quentin Grimes. They probably would have spread out their efforts much more and tried to fill all the spots they need, but they have no spots to fill for next year. So I think for now, Marquette is very comfortable moving forward with the 13 guys who are projected to be on the roster. And I don't know the last time it actually happened that Marquette had 13 guys on the roster who were all eligible to play that year. Like
It is a bit of a unique situation for in the last 6, 7 years, right? I mean,
yeah, I
Marquette's
mean,
always
even
had at
like.
least one player ineligible for one reason or another,
Yeah,
or an
like
empty
whether he
spot.
was, yeah, like either an empty spot or a guy who couldn't play because he was a transfer, or yeah, like a guy leaves the team. So I'd have to think about that when the last time they actually had 13 eligible players all for 1 year, and who knows, who knows,
There
somebody may even
was
end up.
probably in the buzz year, but one of the buzz years, but it was probably he probably had to give if was Jake Thomas was when he got offered a scholarship was one of the last years
Yeah, maybe when he gave
his
that.
senior year.
Maybe when he gave Vanderblue's scholarship to Jake Thomas. But thing is, that year Jabil McKay left,
Oh yeah, you're right. Yeah,
so
never
like they
mind.
didn't have 13 guys that year. But so anyway, it was a good, again, good effort by Marquette. It was worth going for. I don't know if they're going to go after any more 2018 recruits. Probably not any nearly as hard as they went after Grimes. They probably may just stay in touch with a few just in case the spot opens up and they want to
Well,
bring somebody on
I
campus.
suspect they'll keep their eyes on the free agent market, quote unquote, transfer, window or whatever that in the spring. They'll see if you get a Rousey type or a senior a grad transfer point guard, because it's clear next year, Grimes is no doubt a very very significant talent, but he was also a significant talent at a position Marquette probably needs to improve on for next season.
Yeah, I'd say, yeah, if there's like, say, a spot does open and somebody does leave the team, I think Marquette would be an attractive destination for a grad transfer because the team would be very experienced, really deep, and they would have a roster that certainly looks like an NCAA tournament roster. And if there's a like say there was a need at point guard, I think a grad transfer point guard would be very intrigued at the playing time that might be available.
If both if, playing time and the talent they're playing with, right? Because point guard next year will be the only potential weakness, so to speak, on the team next year.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say if Marquette were to add some kind of transfer in the spring, a grad transfer, it would not be a power forward.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think they would do that. But hey, we'll just keep an eye on that. But that's kind of a wrap on recruiting. I don't know how much. I think most of Marquette recruiting news going forward will be on 2019 guys, because I think they're going to start looking for they are involved with quite a few guys who are highly ranked for 2019, and they'll be looking to fill those spots going forward. So that's just about a wrap for this edition of Scrambled Eggs. As always, we thank you for listening and tuning in. We always appreciate your feedback. If you want to reach out to us, I'm Joe McCann 3 on Twitter. Phil is MOOOF23. Cracked Sidewalks is the team handle. When they're not moping and saying life is suffering and whatnot, they are very delightful to talk Marquette basketball with. You can also leave your comments on cracksidewalks.com. You can rate us and review us on iTunes. Please do that. And subscribe on iTunes as well. We also have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. I hope we have something to be thankful for this Thanksgiving, Phil. And hopefully we have a couple wins to be thankful for.
That's all I can hope for. And that's all the team can, you know, they can enjoy Maui, but they better come back with a couple of wins.
And then we would all be very, very thankful.
Correct.
Have a great Thanksgiving, everyone. And until then, seashells and balloons.